the elephant in the room for everyone in Australia is that it's not our domestic emissions that are going to destroy the planet, it's our global emissions footprint. It's the scope three, the exported emissions. And by that, I would emphasize Australia is the third largest fossil fuel exporter in the world, right up there with Putin.
That's Tim Buckley, the founder and director of Clean Energy Finance, speaking on September 3 at the Doctors for the Environment conference at the University of Melbourne. I'm Robert McLean, your host of Climate Conversations. Welcome, it's so great to have you on board. Climate Conversations is assembled here in Shepparton in northern Victoria, Australia, on the lands of the Yorta Yorta people. Yes, the stolen lands of the Yorta Yorta people. I pay my respects to elders, past, present and emerging. Tim Buckley has 30 years of financial experience in covering the Australian, Asian and global equity markets, and he is a highly influential commentator about economic issues. Let's have a listen now to what Tim had to say at the Doctors for the Environment conference. And I apologise for the audio, as Tim was coming to the conference in a virtual sense, and so his voice echoed a little. Anyway, let's have a listen now to what he had to say.
So I'm going to talk about how green finance is key to achieving climate action at the scale needed globally. I think Saul's very, very clear on the ability and logic for Australia to accelerate decarbonisation at the individual level, and the very, very clear economic case. I think he's done a brilliant job of articulating that. And as he pointed out, the numbers have gone even more in favour of the logic that Saul's pointing, as we've had massive global hyperinflation of all things to do with fossil fuels in the last 12 months. So the case for action, the economic case for action, is very clear in Australia. What I'd like to just talk about for the next 20 minutes is the global case and how we are actually seeing momentum shifting. So I thought I might just run through a range of topics in relation to that. Firstly, just setting out why the global energy transition is accelerating. It's the convergence of six key factors. I'll then touch on Australia and just come back to Saul's last comment about the federal government and how pleasing it is to see a federal government working in alignment with the state governments. But then the majority of my discussion will be about global energy trends. And in that context, I'll mention a global perspective, not a Western perspective. China absolutely leads the world. They're embracing the huge, huge investment, financing, employment and export opportunities. And then I'll just touch on a couple of examples of leading global corporates. So six reasons why I argue that the energy transition is accelerating, and the science is obviously telling us it has to, but the reality is the number one reason I do the work I'm doing in talking to finance globally is that we are seeing an inevitable ongoing multi-decade trend of deflation in the cost of all things to do with renewable energy. Now, deflation means declining prices every year, and I think you have all heard solar prices have been dropping 10% per annum for a decade. The wind price, cost of wind has been dropping. The cost of batteries has been dropping dramatically, like 20% per annum. And now this year, we've started to see solar battery costs going up, but going up 10, 20, 30%, not 500%. Which is what oil, gas, and coal prices have done globally. So I would argue 2022 actually highlights the increased acceleration of the gap between ever lower cost renewables and hyperinflation in coal. Secondly, there is global policy momentum. We have seen serious commitments to net zero emissions by 2050 for the developed world, 2060 for China, 2070 for India. We need to accelerate that. I would emphasize Australia now has committed to 43%, but the base number is just absolutely flawed. The previous government picked 2005 as the starting point. That's the all-time record high. And the elephant in the room for everyone in Australia is that it's not our domestic emissions that are going to destroy the planet, it's our global emissions footprint. It's the scope three, the exported emissions. And by that, I would emphasize Australia is the third largest fossil fuel exporter in the world, right up there with Putin. So let's call a spade a spade. It's great to see that the Australian federal government starting to act on our domestic emissions. What we have to do is wean ourselves off the ridiculous exposure that Australia has economically to fossil fuels. So as the world moves, our economy has a huge headwind, and we are a huge global contributor to that. Third aspect, carbon emissions pricing. It's really interesting how I follow the European ETS emissions trading scheme. The price has risen fivefold in the last 2 years, tenfold in the last 4 years, and has really consolidated this year. It almost touched 100 euros a ton. So at the end of the day, the obvious solution as a financier speaking is to price in the externality, put a price on carbon emissions, and the market can solve this really, really fast. Now, Europe's realized that. Okay, they stuffed around for 15 years, but the last 5 years they've really hammered it home, and it's emerging. Australia, unfortunately, has so much politics that a carbon price at the moment is politically toxic. But it's interesting, President Biden has just last week, in his Inflation Reduction Act, put a massive price on methane emissions. So he's not put it on carbon dioxide emissions, but he's put it on methane emissions, $1,600 US a ton tax on methane by 2024-2026. So that's a huge step in the right direction. He sort of snuck it in there. Methane's a quarter of all carbon dioxide emissions in the world. So there's a pricing is happening. So there is, I'm just pointing out, factors that are driving me to be optimistic. I'll come back to this one, but Global Finance Alliance has committed $130 trillion of capital to 1.5 degrees to the Paris Agreement. So a tectonic shift is how the biggest financier in the world describes it. And I 100% agree with him, and I will come back to this. At the end of the day, as you guys are all very, very aware, the science is clear. We have absolutely no choice. There is no economy on an unlivable planet. Try telling that to financiers, amoral people who really are only interested in the risk return metrics. But at the end of the day, we do have a clear logic. The world is getting more, seeing more and more extreme events more frequently, whether it's the Pakistani floods this week or whether it was Delhi having 50 degree temperatures in the middle of spring only a couple months ago. And then the sixth factor, just the cost of inaction is just too high. So this is the global insured natural catastrophe losses from Swiss Re, the biggest reinsurance company in the world. So all the crap that we've heard from the previous federal government about, oh, the cost of action's too high, I'll call rubbish, being polite for a change. It's just the cost of inaction is extreme, it's accelerating, and it hits the poorest people hardest, as the second last question just highlighted. How do we bring everyone in the world along for this journey? Because it's critical we do. So just touching on Australia before I jump into global finance, 43% is a good start. It's nowhere near aligned with climate science, but as Saul said, they're building capacity, they're building momentum, and they're trying to bring the whole constituent with them after a decade of climate science denialism from the LNP federally. So it's a good start. What's a far better start is what Chris Bowen actually has as part of his detail. 82% renewable energy by 2030 for the entire Australian electricity grid is not a good start, it's a great start. It's almost so ambitious as to be impossible to deliver on, but it's great to see the federal government working with the state governments and working with the industry and the regulators to drive that. The other aspect I've been banging the drum on very, very loudly in the last couple of months, is I thought I'd just steal the opportunity now to do it again, that we have, the federal government inherited three crises. They inherited a fiscal crisis, an energy crisis, and a climate crisis. And so one of the arguments we've been putting forward is that it would be appropriate to hit all three of the issues with one go, and that is to put a supernormal tax on windfall gains from fossil fuel companies in 2022. They're making tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars of profit at everyone else's expense. 25, 26 million Australians wear the cost, they all steal the gains. So I think it's time we had multinational tax reform, we get the diesel fuel rebate removed, we move to progressive royalty systems, and the federal government's starting to move on that, and some of the states are moving, so some positive signs. So, right, jumping into green finance globally. The green finance is going to play a critically important role in solving the climate crisis. The question is, from all the scientists, will it happen fast enough? And the answer to date is no. But what I'm here to emphasize to you is that the trends are accelerating, and that when finance moves, get out of the way, because finance is phenomenally powerful. It might be entirely amoral, but you get the right regulatory signals, and the Inflation Reduction Act in America is one of the biggest signals we've ever had. So that's huge. President Biden needs to be applauded for that. He's stuffed around for 18 months getting it there, but he's done it, and that is superb, because America is the biggest economy in the world. Now, why do I emphasize the importance of finance? This is a chart from the IA. It's a lot of data, and all my slides have a lot of data in them. Just the core message I wanted to use this slide to highlight was that the world spends at the moment $2.4 trillion a year on energy. I'll say it again, $2.4 trillion a year on energy globally. Now, forecast out to 2050, by 2050, the world's going to invest $100 trillion in the energy sector. Now, what I'm emphasizing in the IEA, the International Energy Agency, is highlighting in this chart, is that the composition of that investment is going to change as we decarbonize. You will see a pull forward of investment. So rather than having to build a coal-fired power plant and then buy coal every year for the next 40 years, you build a wind farm, you have all the capital cost in year one, and then effectively electricity for free, other than financing, for the next 25 years. So you get a pull forward of investment. We also are seeing countries like India and the emerging markets around the world having to lift themselves out of poverty, so economic growth in those countries is still significant. So you're going to see about $4 trillion a year invested, so $100 trillion. Now, you could call it a cost, but the reality is it's an investment that is required. We spend that money every year. Let's make it an investment. Let's invest in sustainable energy systems rather than systems that destroy our planet. So, to emphasize China's role, in Australia, the politically laden press is constantly reminding us it doesn't matter what we do, it only matters what China does. Let's blame another country. China is the biggest coal consumer and producer and importer in the world, but they are also the biggest investor in every aspect of decarbonization. And when I say they're the biggest investor, by a country mile. So China, well, America will this year install 30 gigawatts of wind and solar, 30,000 megawatts, 30 gigawatts. China will install five times that. They'll install 160 gigawatts of wind and solar this year. Electric vehicles in Australia, it was only the previous prime minister was telling us that electric vehicles would ruin our weekend. Well, in China, they don't believe that sort of crap. The Chinese people are likely to buy 6 million electric vehicles this year, double what they bought last year. And the penetration of electric vehicles in China is now at 26%. So very, very rapidly accelerating to 100% penetration within this decade. So the idea that we, Australia, will be able to import internal combustion engines, new internal combustion engine cars in a decade's time, 15 years' time, it's just ludicrous. They won't be made. So we will follow China's lead. But the other point I'm making this chart is China actually installs more renewable energy than every other developed world country put together. So if you're reading the Murdoch press and hearing the crap that comes from there, you will be told that China's the evil villain of climate emergency. Well, I'm here to tell you that China's actually investing more money than any other country in the world. They're the world leader in hydro, in grid transmission, in rare earth processing, in green hydrogen, in ground heat pumps, in hydro, in nuclear, in wind, in solar, in everything. It's quite staggering how aggressively they're embracing this opportunity. They see it as a race. This is another way of looking at it, and this gets back to the opportunity for Australia, and I'll now have a dig at China having just really inflated them. China dominates the world in a whole lot of critical mineral processing applications. Now, what Putin's invasion of Ukraine has highlighted to the world is that supply chain security is as important as energy security, and China dominates the supply chains of so many industries of the future. That is the huge, huge opportunity for Australia. America, Japan, India, they don't want to be reliant on China solely for supply chains. Australia is blessed with being the biggest producer of iron ore, the biggest producer of lithium, one of the biggest producers of rare earth, vanadium, you name it, copper, nickel, everything. Australia is just blessed, as always, with so many resources. I would argue the biggest opportunity for Australia is, in fact, to value-add mineral processing in Australia before we export it, rather than being the quarry to the world or the quarry to China. And so China's loss will be our gain. We'll gain market share. And so there's just enormous investment opportunity for Australia. Moving on to finance, how can the world bring enough capital to bear fast enough to solve the climate emergency? Well, green bonds are an example of where investment globally is moving in the right direction, and channels and instruments to allocate capital to solve the problem are being built. Now, it's taken a long time, but we did see green bond growth in 2021 up 50%. It's on track to grow another 50% this year. And the Climate Bond Institute, run by an Australian in the UK, Sean Kidney, is forecasting $5 trillion of capital a year by 2025 will be going into green bonds, into solutions for decarbonisation. So it's a pretty positive trend globally. Another trend is that global finance is moving. And I mentioned the Glasgow Finance Alliance for Net Zero Emissions, bit of a mouthful, GFANZ. GFANZ has $130 trillion of capital committed to 1.5 degrees. And we are starting to see these global giants, financial institutional giants, moving. We've seen a plethora of new infrastructure funds like Brookfield, $15 billion for the Global Energy Transition Fund. That's their first transition fund, and it's $15 billion. Now, we need trillions, and we need trillions every year, but the reality is finance is moving, and it's moving quite fast. I'll shout out a positive on BlackRock. Why? Because they're the biggest financial institution in the world. They're the biggest company in the world. They're the biggest company in the world by like a factor of 50%. They're bigger than the Australian economy by a factor of 300%. They're just ginormous. And BlackRock, we called them out 3 years ago as one of the global laggards. Larry Fink told us we were joking. He had no fiduciary duty to respond to the climate imperative. Finance is amoral. He has a fiduciary duty to maximize returns to investors. We emphasize maximize risk-adjusted returns to him. And a year later, he did move. And so he then made a staggering announcement, and the title, "A Tectonic Shift is Accelerating." Those are his words, not mine. I agree with him. So BlackRock's gone from being a global laggard to not necessarily a leader, but when they move, the world moves. And so I just picked a couple of examples. A couple of days ago, BlackRock spent $1 billion building buying up the development rights to 9 of the biggest new batteries in Australia. That's not bad. Their first big global battery investment, and it's Australia. Last year, they announced a tie-up with Temasek, which is the biggest sovereign wealth fund in Asia, to invest in decarbonisation opportunities. So they've also acquired a Taiwanese solar player to build a gigawatt of solar in Taiwan. They're backing the biggest wind farms in Taiwan. So across the board, BlackRock is looking at the sustainable investment opportunities that deliver the right risk return metrics for their investors. Now, when BlackRock moves, they've got a $10 trillion portfolio of assets held on behalf and managed on behalf of their investees. And if they move, they could move 10, 20% of their portfolio. That would be $1 or $2 trillion. So one company could easily deliver a couple of percent of the global needs in the next 3 decades. So I'll give BlackRock a shout out. We need them. Another example, far more credible example than BlackRock, because NextEra Energy is the biggest investor in renewable energy in the world, and it has been for 15 years in a row. So I'll say that again, NextEra Energy, the biggest investor in renewable energy in the world, and it has been for 15 years in a row. This year they'll allocate, I don't know, $15, $16 billion in 1 year. You might not have heard of them. They're the giant of the American power sector. They're the opposite of AGL of Australia. They're investing in the future rather than trying to hold the future back. That's AGL, the dinosaur, the Luddite. Okay, I'll move on. NextEra, positive. NextEra Energy. The other thing that gets me really excited about NextEra Energy is that NextEra Energy has massively outperformed the market. So NextEra Energy is the green line, massive outperformance of the US equity market, the purple line, and the dog of the room, Exxon Energy, the biggest US fossil fuel dinosaur, has massively underperformed on a decade, notwithstanding they've outperformed just in the last year on the back of hyperinflation. So at the end of the day, the reason Larry Fink's moving is because the market's moving, because the wealth generation in investing in solutions is very, very clear, and investing in the dinosaurs that are destroying our planet is actually a wealth hazard. So nothing like a little bit of amoral financial outperformance to drive the world's financial institutions to move. So NextEra Energy will invest $90 billion in this 4-year period on renewable energy and batteries and green hydrogen and grid upgrades. $90 billion, one company, 4 years. Now, if that's not big enough for you, Enel of Italy is the second largest investor in renewables in the world. They have a target, and it's a staggering target, to invest 200 billion euros this decade in renewable energy. So they want to treble their rate of investment in renewable energies to 15 gigawatts a year. They want to treble their entire portfolio of renewable energy in the world to 154 gigawatts by the end of this decade. That is just staggering. And the good news is their shares are outperforming the market. So $200 billion of investment from one Italian company, Enel, that's a global leader. Another global leader, Ørsted of Denmark. And Ørsted used to be called DONG. It used to be the Danish oil and gas company a decade ago. And ironically, Goldman Sachs, that investment banking, amoral global giant, bought into Ørsted, kicked the board out, put in a new board, and all of a sudden, Ørsted has grown over the last 6 years into the world's biggest investor in offshore wind. And the green is Ørsted, massive outperformance of the equity market overall. Ørsted intends to quadruple their offshore wind portfolio by 2030 to 30 gigawatts of offshore wind just this decade. So again, massive outperformance in the equity market, one of the world's leaders. They have shown how offshore wind can be a critical solution for the world. And now Australia is talking about some offshore wind. It's a pretty expensive solution for us because we're just blessed with really cheap onshore wind and solar. But nevertheless, offshore wind will play a part in the decarbonisation of the Australian electricity grid next decade. But America is aiming for 30 gigs of offshore wind by 2030. The UK had an unbelievable tender, 25 gigawatts of offshore wind was tendered by Scotland and the price was staggeringly low, like about a fifth of the price of thermal power in Europe today. So they're going to build out the world's biggest offshore wind project portfolio in the space of the next 4 or 5 years, 25 gigawatts for one country, Scotland. Pretty staggering. Last one, and again, just to emphasize, at the end of the day, the core message I'm giving you is the world is moving. It's not moving fast enough, but the rate of change is accelerating. So I just sort of finished with India. I've spent the last 5 years studying India. India is the fourth largest electricity market in the world. In 15 years' time, it will be the biggest country in the world by population. And the fourth richest man in the world owns, so Mukesh Ambani owns the majority controlling stake in Reliance Industries, a $236 billion Indian giant, one of the strongest outperforming companies in India in the last decade. And this is just an excerpt from his chairman's address from 4 or 5 days ago. And it's just staggering in the ambition. So Mukesh Ambani, who's never built a wind farm in his life, all of a sudden wants to be the biggest wind farm and solar owner in the world by the end of this decade. Staggering stuff when the richest man in India, second richest man in India, fourth richest man in the world, sort of behind Elon Musk, and will have the same sort of impact on the world on Elon Musk, because he, Mukesh Ambani and Gautam Adani between them will probably make India a renewable energy superpower. And Mukesh Ambani has told all his investors he's going to spend $100 billion this decade doing it. He's going to build one of the world's biggest solar factories in the world from a standing start. He's going to build one of the biggest battery factories from a standing start within the next 4 years, and then he's going to build out 100 gigs of renewable energy, and then he's going to do a whole lot of green hydrogen to use all the curtailed free electricity coming from wind and solar when they can't use it all, convert it into green hydrogen, and that will decarbonize the oil refineries of India, which Mukesh Ambani owns. So I just wanted to emphasize the opportunities for finance are huge, they are needed, and the world is moving, led by China. India is going to play a huge role. Finance will play a huge role, and so will players like NL of Italy, Ørsted of Denmark, and NextEra Energy of the US. So I'll finish there. Thank you for your attention.
And you thank us, Tim. Our thanks should be to you. Your thoroughness astounds me. That wraps up this episode of Climate Conversations. Thanks so much for your company. And until we talk again, please take care, stay safe, and please be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. And please, if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it with your friends. Until we talk again, please take care.